Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. Follow them on Instagram at Mint Inc. _USA and look out for the next issue of Mint Mag.
So you want to start a podcast, huh? Well, we got something to help you. The Black Real Estate Dialogue brings you the How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience ebook and webinar bundle.
We are controlling transmission.
Come and put info into action as we show you the step-by-step process to sharing your successful podcast on a budget. This bundle is full of the exact details, social media hacks, and podcasting process we've used to gain 13,000 downloads and over 10,000 Instagram followers. But that's not all. As a bonus, you'll receive the exact super trackers we use to stay organized and free access to our private Facebook group designed to help you execute. Make sure you click that link now because there is an audience for you to reach. The How to Start a Successful Podcast on a Budget with No Experience, the ebook and webinar bundle presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue.
Everyone, welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 49. We are almost at 50, which is crazy to think about. But thank you again for all your support and welcome to another fire episode. A couple quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. Don't forget to leave us a rating and a comment on whichever platform you're listening to this on. It'll help us to reach more people and move up in the rankings. We also have multiple resources available from our trusted partners in the show notes that will help you on your journey to real estate investment, side hustles, and more. Definitely make sure to check those out. And remember that the best investment you can make is in yourself. Also, sign up for our email list. By signing up for this email list, you'll receive discounts, additional content, resources, and so much more. So go to my new course, A Beginner's Guide to Buying Your First Out-of-State Property. You can find the link in the show notes below. We've been getting amazing reviews and been helping a lot of people who live in expensive markets learn about how they can invest out of state. You know, if you live in California, like myself, you can invest in a place like Ohio, or if you live in New York or New Jersey or any of these expensive places, you can definitely invest out of your area. I think the course will help you a great deal. Also, this episode is sponsored by the Black Real Estate Dialogue Real Estate Investing Community. In this community, you'll learn about real estate daily from your peers within our private Slack channel. We have guest speakers several times a month, monthly team check-ins, and much more. You can get discounted access by using the link in the show notes below. Without further ado, this is one of the most inspiring episodes we've had. I was super pumped up after this episode, and so I know you will all get a ton of value out of it. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. I'm very excited for this interview. Here with me, I have Reginald Jordan out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Reginald, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So first, I would love to learn more about what your childhood was like and what you saw or maybe what you didn't see that shaped your view of what it means to build wealth.
I was raised in a single parent home. My father was buried on my second birthday. So I never really knew my father, but my great grandfather was probably the biggest influence in my life. This was a man that was born in 1896. So his parents were slaves. And I didn't find out until I was 12 years old when he passed away that my great grandfather owned two city blocks of houses. And I was shocked. And I started doing research on this man. And I found out that he helped a lot of people in that neighborhood to obtain their first home because he financed them. Because of red line in the South, I mean, there were a lot of people that could not get traditional loans. So my great-grandfather financed those people, and some of those people still own those homes today. But then I also found an amazing thing about my great-grandfather was that he bought these houses from one of the richest men in Chattanooga, the Montague family. And I did not know that until I started researching all the deeds. And that's when I found out that Mr. Montague carried the note for my great-grandfather. And I still to this day have not been able to find out how those two men knew each other.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty significant.
So, I mean, it was just, you know, it was a normal childhood. I mean, I was always inquisitive. I mean, I had uncles that owned their own businesses. I had one uncle that was a demo man, and my summers were spent either playing sports or crawling up under houses and tying chains to the girder so the house could be demoed. So, I mean, I was always working as a young boy. So, I mean, work is normal for me.
Definitely, definitely. I think it's very interesting that you were able to find out all those great things about your great-grandfather and the opportunity he gave to people in the community to own homes and things of that nature. I guess as a kid or you know, as you grew up, what kind of impact do you think that had on you? Just knowing that, you know, your great-grandfather was such a powerful man who also had a heart to help others as well.
Well, that was one of the things that our family, that has pretty much been a tradition in our family to help people. I learned that from him early on. I saw it with my mother. My mother would give you the clothes off her. I mean, she would literally give you the clothes off her back. I watched my mother work from sunup to sundown. Sometimes she would fall asleep in a chair just from pure exhaustion. And I told her when I was a little boy, and I did not even remember saying this. I said, "Mom, I'm going to build you a house in the same exact spot where you were born." And I had an aunt that reminded me of that the day I started building our house. And she said, "Baby, you're not going to believe this, but you told your mother you was going to build her a house." And she brought it back to my memory. And it was probably one of the fondest moments of my building career was to build my mother a home in the exact spot where she was born.
That is incredible. That is incredible. So I guess that leads into our next question. You know, especially for people in our community, being the person building the home is not something that we think of first. You know, we might think of, you know, maybe I'll get some investment property, but very rarely do we think about maybe I'll build a property. So how did you, I mean, so I think it's really great that you're in that field and a great inspiration. How did you get into this industry?
I was actually fired from my job. I was a furniture salesman. Mm-hmm. And this is so funny. I was fired 3 times in one day. And it was my off day of all days. So,
wow.
And I made up my mind at that moment. I said, I will never let another man control my financial security or my family's financial security. So I started watching Home and Garden TV when it first came on. And I said, you know, I can build a house. And everybody laughed at me. And I said, all I need to do is just build one every 3 to 4 months, and it will replace my income as a furniture salesman. So I bought a house, and I was remodeling the house. And a builder, he was actually a developer. I met him through my brother-in-law. He said, look, you're spending too much money remodeling his house. He said, I'll show you how to build a house new from the ground up. It'll be less headache, less money. And he said, come by the house on Friday. And he said, that way my bookkeeper, I'll be meeting with my bookkeeper and you can understand the process. So I go to his home and his bookkeeper was there. And he said, come on in. He said, I want you to meet Miss Betty. And he said, Miss Betty lets me know how much money I have. And this was a Caucasian gentleman. I mean, he invited me in and he said, look, I'm going to show you how to make money, more money in less time, less headache. And he said, you're going to need to get you a good bookkeeper because you're going to make so much money, you're not going to be able to keep up with it. And I thought, who is this guy? You know, how am I in this guy's house? And as I later researched, this man, his father was one of the first developers here in Chattanooga. So they had built probably at that time, I think they had built 800 homes. And he took me under his wing and he said, look, I'm going to show you the ins and outs. And I was just thoroughly impressed by this man taking me under his wings. He never knew me. I mean, we just met through my brother-in-law and it took off from there.
Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible that, you know, he took an interest in you. So I guess, what were those early days like, just learning the ropes? Like what are some things you can recall from them?
The early days were pretty rough for me because a lot of the experience minority builders would not share information with me. They felt like I was a threat, and I think I'd only built two homes. And then I think on my third home, my home started pre-selling before I finished them because I was marketing the homes before I even started them. And the word got around, you know, we're in a small city, but I think they were jealous of that. But they never shared information with me. I mean, I would share information with them about what I was doing, but they never offered information to help me. So it was pretty rough from the beginning. And then getting capital was pretty hard. I would go to a lot of the banks and I had the credit score. I owned the property and it was real hard. I mean, and then all of a sudden one day I talked to Jack. And he said, look, you're going about it the wrong way. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you're going into the bank and you're showing them that you need their money. He said, they're never going to lend you money if you show a need. He said, you've got to go in and let them know you don't need their money, but you're here to help them make money. And that one thing changed the whole aspect of the lending business for me. It opened up a lot of working capital. Wow. So that's the thing I want to, you know, let young people know. Stop showing a need when you need to borrow money. Let the bank or the lender think that you don't need them and they'll lend you the world.
I like that. I like that. So how long ago was it that you built your first house?
24 years ago.
Wow. Wow. That's awesome. So I guess, can you walk us through, I guess, that first build, like what you can recall from that and what that experience was like?
The first build, I was still working a job and I took a 2-week vacation. And the first week was awful. We had supplies stolen. We had a supplier that was not delivering the material, but charging us for it.
Wow.
I had an electrician that was stealing material. I had a roofer that was stealing material. You name it, everybody was stealing. I had a neighbor that was fighting me over a fence that was actually on my side of the property. It was probably one of the worst experiences I ever had. And I thought about, you know, am I doing the right thing? And I went and talked to my wife. She said, look, if this is the worst thing that could happen, that lets you know that you're on the right path. Wow. She said, because it's supposed to be wrong. So don't give up. And I didn't. I mean, I really wanted to, but I thank God I didn't.
Wow. That's big. I think that sounds like that was a big turning point, you know, and many people, perhaps rightfully so, would have been like, you know, maybe this is not for me. Maybe I can just go to what is comfortable, what feels normal to me. But I think it says a lot about you that you persisted, and it's great that you also had that support. You know, imagine where you would be if you're just doing a towel back at that time, 24 years ago.
Yeah, I would probably be working somewhere that I didn't like, not making an impact on the community, not being able to empower young people, boys and girls. I mean, I've been a school teacher, you name it, I've done it all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, my thing right now is I want to leave a business to my two sons. I have two grandkids right now. My 8-year-old granddaughter can read a blueprint.
Wow.
She's excited. So my thing is, I don't want to see what my great grandfather worked hard for go away after I die. And that's the biggest thing right now for me is I want to leave enough knowledge for my sons to continue the business and then for my grandchildren to continue the business. Because the only way we're going to come out of this thing, and I've always told people this, is three E's: economics, education, empowerment. If we don't have those three E's in the Black community, we're going to always suffer. So we've got to have economics. We've got to have education about what we're doing and how we're doing it. And we got to empower each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of your family, how involved have they been over the years? I know you mentioned that your granddaughter, she can already read a blueprint. So what's it like? What's it been like over the past 20 plus years with the family, just seeing you do everything that you've been able to do?
Well, my kids are excited about it. I mean, they're not kids anymore. My sons can basically do the day-to-day operations.
Wow.
The hard part for me is transitioning it out. Because I've been doing it so long, I enjoy what I do.
Yeah.
I went back to teaching school about maybe 4 years ago because I got burned out on building. I mean, after you get to building so many houses, it's like the routine is just a monotony. And I was like, I need to find me something else to do.
Yeah.
So I stepped away for about 3 years and I was teaching high school construction classes.
Nice.
And it bothered me that these children were leaving high school with no skills whatsoever. A big percentage of them could not read on high school level. And I was probably one of the worst teachers because I had an attitude about it. I was very vocal. I said, we're giving kids diplomas and they can't even read the diploma. They can't fill out a job application. They don't know how to communicate with people. And I said, I'm not going to be a part of this. And I said, I'm done. It bothered me that here in this stage of life, we're not educating children. And that's going to be a problem. I mean, these kids, like I said, they can't read. They don't know how to search for a job. And they don't have employable skills. So what do we do with that group of kids? I mean, do we just lock them all up? Or what do we do? You know, that's a big problem. So what I'm going to do when I retire soon, I'm in the works right now, starting a job skills class. I want kids, if a kid can read a tape measure, they can work in construction. I don't care if you're a boy or a girl. If you can read a tape measure and I can teach you how to read a tape measure in less than 5 minutes, you can get a job in the construction field.
Yeah. Definitely. That's powerful. That's powerful. So I guess going from the first couple of builds, where did things kind of grow and evolve over, I guess, the next decade or so?
My bread and butter has always been to build for low to moderate income people. I'm trying to transition people out of paying more in rent, using up most of their income in rent. I'm trying to educate them about how they can build wealth through real estate. But that's always who I've always focused on, has been low to moderate income. One of the most frustrating parts is right now that 98% of my buyers are single females.
Wow.
That's a problem. And I'm pressing right now for young men to become homeowners because they need to be the breadwinner. They need to be a homeowner and quit trying to just ride somebody's coattail. So that's one of the biggest things I'm pushing right now, is to get these young men trained so they can have livable wage jobs and they can be homeowners. They can get their wealth, because here's where we're lacking. If you're not buying real estate, you're going to be behind economically. I mean, you're already behind because of certain situations, but I believe the greatest way to build wealth is through real estate. And you don't have to be college educated to buy real estate. I mean, some of my wealth is friends never made out of high school. I mean, I've got a guy right now, and all he does is build roads and subdivision, and he makes $15 million a year.
Wow.
And I mean, he's just building roads. So, I mean, we've got to get these kids workable skills so they can live.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So have most of your builds been in a certain area of Chattanooga, or are you kind of like spread around?
I'm in the hood. All of my bills are in the hood.
Definitely.
Maybe of the 400 houses I've built, maybe only 10 have not been in the hood.
For sure.
That's mainly where I concentrate on, in those neighborhoods, and show the elderly people that, hey, somebody does care. Mm-hmm. One of the things I do is when I go into a neighborhood to help rebuild it, I make sure that the elderly people around the home, their property taxes are not raised.
Wow.
I get their property taxes frozen. So grandmother and grandfather are not affected by that new home being built by them.
Right.
Okay. So I get their property tax frozen, but the value of their home goes up. So they can leave something to the next generation. But at the same time, I don't want grandmother or grandfather to lose their home because they can't pay higher property taxes. So, I mean, that's one of the things that we make sure of, is if we go on a certain block, we make sure that all the elderly people on that block, we get their property taxes frozen.
Wow.
So they're not affected by the new growth.
Wow. Wow. I really like that you mentioned that for a couple of reasons. One, you know, all over the country, right? We see communities where most of our people are, there's new development, new things are happening. And one of the first things people say, well, what about property tax? What about, you know, the elderly who live here? So can you talk to us about, I guess, what that conversation is like with the powers that be, to incentivize them to freeze the property tax? Like, what does that look like in your particular market?
Well, it's not a hard thing, because it's the morally right thing to do. Okay.
Yeah.
These people have worked their whole life, and the only asset they have is their home.
Yeah.
You know, how are you going to sit here and take this person's home when the only income they have, their decision is, do I pay the light bill or do I buy medication? Do I eat or do I buy medication? The last thing on their mind should be losing their home. The only thing they've got that's paid for. Right. So that was one of the first things I said I'm going to do. If we ever go on a block, we're going to make sure their property taxes get frozen.
Yeah.
If we have to fill the paperwork out ourselves, I'm not depending on anybody else. I'm going to make sure their property taxes are frozen. Okay. Not only that, I'm going to go to the state for them, because there are incentives where the state will pay a big proportion of their property tax.
Wow.
See, a lot of us don't know these things in inner city areas. So when these outside developers come in, they're not caring about these people in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
That's not their problem. But me, someone who's lived here my whole life, and I know the burden it is on elderly people. Right now, elderly people are our fastest growing population. They're projecting by 2030 that we'll have more homeless elderly people than any population group, the baby boomers,
wow, of
any population in our group. So I'm here to protect them, okay? I'm trying to build a new house in your neighborhood. So now you'll have more police coverage. So your crime is going down because now you have homeowners and not renters. But at the same time, I'm going to make sure your property taxes stay frozen, and I'll make sure the state helps you pay your property tax.
Wow. I like that. I like that a lot. And, you know, a lot of people think, you know, to be in business, to build wealth, we have to be this, you know, macho and sensitive person who doesn't care about people, but it's not true. You know, you can and you should be somebody who cares about others, you know, as you're growing your business. And I feel like, you know, being that way will help you to grow your business. You know, it'll help you to build more relationships and, you know, looking out for the next person, it always comes back to you. So I think it's great that you make it a point to do that. And as you mentioned, you build hundreds of houses. So, you know, if you think about that fact, you know, you can only imagine how many families you've helped, you know, be able to stay and keep their homes, even though new things are happening around them. How many, you know, descendants of those who maybe have gone on since then are able to pass their houses down and all those things simply because you decided to go the extra mile and help and not just like be this person coming to the neighborhood, just building up and not caring about what happens to those who are around. So I think, you know, something I definitely don't want to pass over and something I think is very commendable.
Well, you have to realize that a big percentage of our people have never owned homes. Mm-hmm. A lot of my buyers are first time home buyers in the history of their family. Wow. So you have to not only educate the buyer before the sale, you have to educate them after the sale.
Yeah.
It's a constant ongoing thing. Because you do not want them to lose this asset. Okay. Mm-hmm. So like I said, the three E's, education, economics, empowerment, those three are very key because if they miss any one of those components, they're back to paying rent, paying a big percentage of their income towards rent. So I'm trying to eliminate that, period.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love it. So I think it's great that, you know, also, you know, you focus your builds in the hood, you know, in areas where most likely it'll be us. Can you talk about why you decided to do that instead of going to maybe more affluent areas? I guess what was it for you that just, you know, inspired you to just make that your niche and just the areas where you chose to build?
Well, I thought about my great grandfather, how he helped people. When I first started building, I could have easily gone to the suburbs. But then I thought about it. I said, wait a minute. Here's an untapped market. Nobody's thinking about the hood. I've got untapped buyers that nobody's thinking about. I can educate them, and they'll be three and four generations of buyers, which that's what I'm on now. I've got grandkids that are buying from me where their grandparents bought from me.
Wow.
So the whole thing was I need residual buyers.
Yep.
So I'm trying to change the course of that family's life. I'm trying to change that family tree. So why not in the hood?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, nobody's thinking about the hood until they want to gentrify it. I have been known to go into neighborhoods and build a low-income house just to stop gentrification.
Wow.
And I've had people get mad at me, and I do it on purpose. I'll go in there and build a 1,000-square-foot house, and I know it's only going to appraise for $100,000, but that gives that neighborhood time to adapt and maybe stave off gentrification. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to come and build a Mac mansion beside a $100,000 house. So I kind of, you know, I guess I'm the Black Robin Hood. I stay in your neighborhood because I know what's coming. I go to planning meetings.
Yeah.
I know what they're planning. You know, I tell you, you know, I let you know, but some people listen, some people don't. I mean, I can't save everybody, but you know, like my wife says some days, hey, take your cape off, put it in the drawer and chill out. Yeah. You know, so I listen to my wife.
That's always good advice, right?
Oh, yeah. You got to have that person that when you're a visionary, you got to have that person that you can sound off to at 1 or 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning that don't go off, that listens to you and says, okay, now what? And I mean, we've been together since high school. So I mean, that's my sounding board. I mean, when I told her I was leaving my job, she didn't get upset. She went and prayed. We had a newborn child. She said, I'm going to pray. And maybe that next morning before I woke up, she said, go for it. And now that was all I needed. You know what I'm saying? So hadn't always been easy. But I mean, I'm thankful. I mean, I hope I've made impact. That's one of the biggest things I remember about my great grandfather. He was always helping somebody. And I remember his kids would always say that, you know, reach back and help somebody. And that's what it's all about. We've got to help each other. I mean, nobody's coming to our rescue. Nobody's going to, you know, pull us up out of what we're in. We gotta do it together.
Yeah.
Nobody's coming to rescue us. So I mean, we need to quit thinking that. We're the only help we've got.
100%. So you know, let's say you have a young person, or maybe not a young person, maybe just someone, a black woman or man who is interested in new builds, but you know, maybe they've never heard anybody who did a new build, or maybe they listen to this and they're like, it sparks their interest. What advice would you give to someone in that position who's just very green, but you know, they're very interested in getting into this industry?
Do your research. Do your research. And then find someone that you can follow. I mean, I'm on Instagram. I mean, I was never intending to be on social media. My youngest son said, Dad, you need to go on Instagram. I said, you know, what is that? And he said, you need to go on Instagram. I said, okay, well, show me how. And find somebody that's doing what you're doing and then follow them, okay? Don't follow somebody just because they have a lot of followers, okay?
Yep.
I've seen a lot of followers on people here on Instagram, and they can't read a tape measure. So research the people, follow them, and see what they're doing. Not what they say they're doing. See what they're doing. Now, here's something that a lot of new people can do. If you want to get into this building game, check your local community college and see if they have a one-day course where you can get your builder's, your contractor's license without having to take a test. Some cities don't, you know, don't ask for a builder's, a contractor's license, but the ones that do, you can probably go to a local community college and get your contractor's license without having to take a test. Look at YouTube. I mean, if you can build a bomb off of YouTube, you can build a house off of YouTube. You know, I mean, YouTube will teach you a lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Definitely. So can you walk us through the process? You know, let's say, you know, you identified a piece of land or where you like to build a house. Like, what is generally, you know, your process, I guess, from just identifying it to going through and, you know, we have a new house. I mean, of course, like, you know, a condensed version, I'm sure it's not, you know, so you, I'm sure you spend hours kind of describing it, but I guess at a high level, like what will be the steps involved in that process?
For locating a piece of land?
Yeah, locating and then building.
I do a lot of riding in my truck. So mainly in the inner city, you're going to find a lot of overgrown lots. Once you find an overgrown lot, you know, research and, you know, find out who owns it. A lot of times it may be an out of town owner. So they're tired of the city sending them notices about, you know, overgrown grass and being fined. I have gotten lots, you know, building lots for $100. I have gotten them, $200. I've had people give me lots wow. because they got tired of the city, you know, citing them to court. But when you find a lot, the first thing you want to find out is what are the dimensions and what's zoned? What is it zoned for? A lot of people want to build multifamily in a residential area, and that's not allowed. So that's the two most important things. Find out your lot dimensions, what that area, let's say, what is zoned to build, and then go from there. Once you find that out, then that's when you want to find out how much house can I put on this lot, and who's my buyer? Who's my target buyer? I've been blessed right now to where our homes are pretty much, we've got people lined up just waiting.
Wow.
So we can pretty much pinpoint who's going where. We can kind of tell them in advance, okay, here's an address, go look at it, see what you like, and then let's pick a house out. That's one of the things that we're dealing with right now is land has gotten expensive and lumber prices have tripled. So we're still working through it, but because of COVID and the hurricane season, this last house that we're working on right now, the last two, the lumber package tripled.
Wow.
So that's put somewhat of a crimp in our building process, but I told my son, just go ahead and build. I mean, we can't stop because of that. But it happens every year, every hurricane season, The manufacturers find a reason, quote unquote reason, to increase the prices. And this is their way of not getting sued for price gouging, because they have a legitimate reason. They say, well, hurricanes hit the production mills in Louisiana, and plus COVID hurt labor. So, it's crazy. But you work through it, though. You know what I'm saying? You can't let that stop you.
Definitely. And are your sons, are they both involved in the business?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome.
Yeah, they're trying to get me out. I mean, they tell me every day, old man, go sit down. I'm like, no, not yet.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy what I do. The joy of seeing a single mom move out of a housing project and then to see a kid, man, that run into their own bedroom or play in their own yard, the joy of seeing that never gets old, man. It never gets old. Never. Because they were always told, you can't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's not for you. And just the joy of seeing, you know, the tears of that single mom at the closing table crying.
Wow.
Because nobody in the history of their family has ever owned a home. That's my joy right there, man. I mean, I've sold houses at cost just to see that woman come out of that housing project.
Wow. That's big.
I mean, there's no greater joy than to uplift another human when life has told them you'll never get that. Don't let Mr. Jordan hear that.
Mm-mm.
Like, come on, baby, let's see what we can do for you. Because these people just need somebody to encourage them. And I mean, there's no greater feeling, like I said, when they see their name on that deed and you give them those keys and that kid runs up and hugs you and says, thank you. Oh, man.
Wow.
That's a beautiful thing.
Definitely. That's incredible. So as far as the type of homes you build, do you have like a template or like a blueprint that you go by, or do you do different kinds of homes? Like, what does that look like?
I basically built five homes. I mean, I've got five patterns. I mean,
That
range from two bedroom, three bedroom, up to four bedroom. But I let people go on right now. I let them go online, find something you like, send it to me, and I'll send it over to my architect and we'll draw it for you just for you. You know, I try to stay away from custom homes because here's what I'm trying to show them. Let's start with something basic. let it grow in value, mm-hmm. and then we're going to take baby steps. I have a lady right now that she trusted me 20 years ago. She was a single mom at the time. She had two kids, I think, at the time. Mm-hmm. Bought her first house, and she put like, $1,000 now. Mm-hmm. And it was a three-bedroom house. She came back to me 6 years later when her job, she went from being a working a chicken plant mm-hmm. to she was a supervisor now. She said, I want another house. I said, okay. I said, let's get the first one sold. She said, oh, no, we're not selling that first one. I'm going to keep it as a rental house. I said, okay. So we built her the second house. The first house brought in enough rent to where it almost paid her mortgage on the second house.
Wow.
Now her income has increased. She comes back to me 3 years ago and says, okay, I'm ready for my dream home. I said, so what are we doing with those other two houses? She said, let's sell them now. She put $150,000 down on her dream home. The profit from those first two houses, all because she followed the process.
Wow. That's big. That's big. Yeah.
That was major. I mean, she said, I'm going to put $150,000 down. I said, $150,000 what? She said, I made $75,000 off both of those first two houses you built for me. And I was like, you were patient. You followed the blueprint. She said, oh, yeah. She said, I listen. She said, you never thought I wasn't listening, but I listen.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It must be really awesome to see that. How many homes do you think you've built over the past, say, 24 years?
I think I stopped counting it. I think I'm up to 400.
Wow.
I stopped counting. I mean, you get to a point, you stop counting. You just really enjoy the process. I can ride around Chattanooga and I can pretty much see a house that we built just about on every street.
Wow.
Sometimes I have to remind my kids, remind me of a house that we built. I mean, I've forgotten. I'll see kids playing in a yard and come to find out they were kids of the grandparent, you know, and I'm like, I built that house. They're like, yeah, you built our house. Wow. So you just, right now it's a ministry for me. That's what it really boils down to. I'm beyond, you know, counting right now. I want to see how many lives I can impact.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see lives change economically, you know?
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't mind building a house at cost just to see someone come up economically.
Right.
You know, and this is one thing I guarantee everybody that buys from me. The moment you sign that dotted line, you have equity in your home. I don't take all the equity out of the house. No need to. You know, I have people trying to tell me that I need to sell stuff on Instagram. For what? I don't need to sell you anything.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean,
I'm not bashing anybody's hustle, but that ain't me. I don't need.
That's powerful. I mean, they tell me,
man, you need to package that and sell it. For what? How can I help somebody, you know?
Yeah.
That's all I ask, you know. And here's the thing about that. Mm-hmm. Don't blow up my inbox saying, hey, I can't stand that. I
mean, tell us more about that.
Oh, man, it's hey, and I mean, be respectable. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, Mr. Jordan, Reginald, how you doing? Introduce yourself, and then I'll respond. But this, hey, man, why you didn't respond? You know, you going to help me or not? I'm like,
whoa.
Yeah, man.
That's not cool.
I mean, I have a young lady right now that I gave her my blueprint on how to build a house from start to finish. I have a young man in Florida. I've sent blueprints for free. Didn't charge them nothing because they asked the proper way.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a way of doing things. I mean, You'll find out, man. Look, I'll send you information just because you said something on the post. I mean, I've shown people, I've given away blueprints that I paid thousands of dollars for free. Just shoot me an email. I'll send it to you. I mean, I've got some multifamily property. That's what I'm doing right now, is building mostly multifamilies for my retirement. Mm-hmm. And I send out the blueprint. You know, you're no competition to me. Only competition I have right now is time.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's that abundance mentality.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I'm not in competition with anybody, man.
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm just here to help, man. That's all I can do. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I want to leave this world a better place than what it was while I was here. That's it.
Definitely. Definitely. So you mentioned you're working on multifamily now. What does the future look like? I know your sons are trying to get you to take a step back, but I feel like you have a lot more left in you. You have a lot more to give before you kind of ride off into the sunset, so to speak. What's the future look like for you and for the business?
It'll definitely grow with them because they're young, they're energetic. Me, I'm looking at doing apartment complexes.
Nice.
Apartment complexes, multifamily properties. My main focus right now is building multifamily or apartment complexes for low-income retired people.
Nice.
I want to build a couple of gated communities to where these people can be safe. And I want to build them in the hood. I want them to have a place where they'll have full medical people on staff all the time. They have their own walking park, you know, a lake, barbecue pavilions, whatnot. But I want it to be a gated community because I want them to feel safe. And I don't want it to feel like it's institutionalized.
Yeah.
I want it to be separate, like little cottages, where they can have their independence. They can come and go, but it's going to be on my nickel.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to take care of the ones that took care of us.
Yeah.
That's my goal. I want them to live the last days of their life unbothered about anything. The last thing they need to think about is, I've got this little retirement check. What am I going to do with it? Well, if you want to go drop it like it's hot, or whatever you want to do, you know, it's your money. I got your food, I got your medical, I got your house, I got your cover. It's on me. Go live life, you know?
Yeah.
That's my dream right now for retirement. It's for these seniors who, you know, took care of us to live their life to the fullest, man.
100%. And wow, this has really been a great interview. And the main thing that I gather from here is just you lead with giving. You know, it's in your heart to give and to help people. And I personally believe, you know, in addition to your skill for this work, I believe your heart and just wanting to give and help people to build wealth, help people to have a better future. I believe that's led to a lot of your success. And I can tell, like, it keeps you going, you know, just knowing that there's more people to help, there's more work to do. So it's just, I'm blown away right now. I'm blown away. And I'm very, it's just, it means a lot to see a Black man who thinks that way, you know, because a lot of times, you know, through the media and through other ways, like we're raised to just, in many ways, to just be these people, these men who just think about ourselves and want to, you know, how can I look good? How can I impress people? But it's not really popular or common to give and just to want to help people. And I really want people in our community to realize you get everything in life from what you're willing to give people, you know, what you're willing to, you know, you help somebody have a better future, you'll be blessed. You know, you will receive what you want. If in your heart, you really want to help people, you know, money is a byproduct of giving and helping, you know, you can prosper, you know? And I think just your story, just, you know, talking about being fired from the job and, you know, meeting the gentleman who took you under his wing and what you've been able to do to this day. And now you have your sons as parts of the business. You know, I just think it's an incredible story.
Well, you know, thank you. But, you know, here's the thing that I want people to understand. Mm-hmm. A closed hand, it can't receive or give. And that's the analogy I always give with my sons. As long as your hand is closed, you can't receive, you can't give. Until you open your hand, nothing's going to happen. A closed hand can never receive anything. It can never give anything. And that's where I think we missed it at. We think we got to hoard it up until ourselves. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to come in. Nothing's going to go out. Help people. I mean, it doesn't hurt to help somebody. I mean, what does it help to give someone information that could possibly change the trajectory of that whole family's life? I mean, just one simple word or one suggestion. You could keep a kid, you know, out of prison, out of a gang, out of a grave. It's just, we've got to be more giving to each other because, hey, we're only 13% of the population. So we gotta thrive some kind of way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, is there anything else you'd like to leave with our listeners? Any advice or words of wisdom for those who are interested in building wealth and, you know, getting into real estate, new builds and all those things?
Well, the best business book you can read is The Hare and the Tortoise. That's the best business book I would advise you to read. Mm-hmm. Because it'll teach you about having patience, learn how to be a research geek. Just because someone says it or it's on YouTube or whatnot, research it and find out for yourself. And the biggest thing I would say is help somebody. You'd be surprised that one seed you plant could be the seed that changed your whole life. You'll never know how much you can help somebody, you know, with that one seed of advice, you know. So I tell young people all the time, don't be selfish, help somebody. Definitely. You know, that's my thing, man. Help somebody.
Yeah.
You know, hey, help's on the way. That's what Country Wayne says. Help's on the
way. He's funny. I haven't watched his videos in a while. I gotta catch up on it. I gotta catch up on some of his videos. That's great, man. And also, you are first guest from Tennessee. So can you tell us more about Chattanooga and just, like, you know, real estate wise, where things are at from where you perceive, you know, perhaps some new things coming to the city, how it's grown over the years?
Chattanooga went from being a tourist town, you know, Sea Rock City, you know, Lookout Mountain. It was really known for industry. We have the founders here that make they were making brakes for cars. They were making fire hydrants, which they still are. Chattanooga is well known for making fire go over the plants. And now they have about maybe 7,000 employees. They made a $9 billion investment into the community. So just building that plant made the real estate industry just boom. According to our local Home Builders Association, we're about 8,500 doors short for serving the people.
Wow.
So what that tells you is you cannot build houses fast enough.
Wow.
You cannot build apartments fast enough because we're 8,500 doors short. But at the same time, homes below 150, nobody's building homes below 150 but me. I'm the only builder in this town that will do it.
Yeah.
It's profitable. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I have a house right now, that same house, different location. In one location is 150. In a gentrified neighborhood is 290.
Yeah.
Same house. House never changed. It was just the location. Do I regret not, you know, going to those neighborhoods more? Nah. I hadn't missed a meal.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I get frustrated some days when I think about going to those areas. But then again, I remember what my mission, my ministry is, to help the underserved.
Definitely.
I'm not lacking anything right now, you know?
Yeah.
I'm served, you know, because they need housing too.
Yeah.
You know, they need their own bed. My granddaughter will. I'll continue to take care of elderly people because nobody else is looking out for them. Somebody's got to be their advocate. Why not me?
Definitely. Definitely.
So, you know, Chattanooga is a changing, it's changing rapidly. But no matter how many people come into town, I mean, we have the fastest internet in the world.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we still have people that can't afford to pay rent, but can buy a house. It's crazy. I mean, but those are the times that we live in. But at the same time, I'm still going to help the underserved because they need houses too.
Definitely. Definitely. Awesome. Awesome. Well, Reginald, really appreciate you coming on the show. Definitely learned a lot, and you know, I'm sure our listeners will learn a great deal as well. So I definitely appreciate you taking the time.
Man, thank you for the opportunity. I'm really humbled by it. I mean, you may not see me on Instagram anymore, but no, I'm very humble. I thank you for the opportunity, and if I can help anybody, man, you know, just reach out to me the right way, you know, but I'll help anybody I can, you know, so thank you always, man. Thank you.
For sure. And where can people find you and keep in contact with you?
I'm at Reg the Builder on Instagram, or they can reach me at infinite construction TN LLC@gmail.com. I'm always available.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's B-R-E-D Podcast. Until next time.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.